You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. As I said last show, I was under the weather Friday with a fever, and it actually got worse over the weekend. Actually, a lot worse. So I was debating today whether or not I was going to give a show at all. I'm going to try to give at least a 30-minute show, and I want to cover two stories that are in the news, and probably, I know both of them will have legs. So this is not my last opportunity to talk about them, but I wanted to definitely give you some of my comments, opinions on it. Now, the first is regard what I call the traitorous terrorist treaty, and that's the nuclear treaty that John Kerry, our Secretary of State for 18 months and counting, and then it'll be out, as well as our President Obama agree to with Iran. I'm hoping that the Republicans win the presidential race in 2016, because I'm afraid if the Democrats win and Hillary is the nominee, which I think is not necessarily a done deal, but as long as there's no real substantive challenger to her, and I'm still holding out for Jerry Brown to announce, I think he might get in the race if she truly stumbles. And I think that there is a distinct possibility that's going to happen. But we'll see. The problem for any challenger of Hillary is most of the press, the media, the television networks are behind her. Doesn't mean they respect her and they don't like the way she's treating them. But she's the only game in town. And she is the front runner of the Democratic Party, so they cover for her and will cover for her just like they did Barack Obama. In other words, they're not doing their job. They're not doing what I would call investigative journalism. They're largely propagandists for the Democratic Party. Now, if you listen to the show, and I need to set this up a little bit, because if you're a first-time listener, you might not know either my political philosophy or which party I am for, and given what I just said, well, he must just be another Republican. Well, no, I'm not a Republican, nor am I a Democrat. I have always been a conservative, both a traditional conservative, a national defense conservative, a fiscal conservative, and a traditional conservative. I think the broader category is traditional conservative. And there's been a divide in the conservative movement between the traditionalists, some would call them the trads, and the libertarians. Over the years, I've more and more become a libertarian. And the reason is quite simple. Over time, I've seen the Republican Party win election after election after election, but the government just gets bigger and bigger. More departments, more agencies, more regulations, more taxes. So I finally woke up to the fact that both of these parties are big government parties. Now, I don't like to quote George Wallace, because he was a Democratic governor of Alabama, and he was a segregationist. But he was once quoted as saying, there's not a dime difference between either political party. Now, that's not really true, but it is making the point. And a good example of this is the traitorous terrorist treaty. And what I'm referring to is the fact that I think this is the worst possible deal that this administration could negotiate. We had a good hand. We had if not all the cards, many of the cards, and President Obama and his negotiator, John Kerry, threw in the hand. And as a result, it's only a matter of time before Iran has nuclear weapons. Now, if you've listened to past shows, I already believe they have several nuclear weapons. They haven't tested them. They haven't put them on missiles yet, but they have the weapons. Because you'll notice, even Barack Obama said, well, they have enough fuel for at least 10 nuclear weapons. That really confirms it. Now, supposedly that fuel is going to be shipped out of country. But that's only the fuel that we know about. And that's the problem. The Islamic Republic of Iran has consistently cheated on its international agreements. And the biggest one is the non-proliferation of weapons. It agreed to not be a nuclear proliferator for a period of 35 years. And it violated that agreement. And now we're, in essence, blessing the current situation with Iran. Now, I think the undoing of this treaty will be the fact that you must verify it, and you get into a very tricky situation here. Oh, yes, we can inspect existing nuclear facilities and infrastructure, which is only to be expected. But what we can't do is inspect military installations without first going through a notification that can take upwards of 30 days. Now, you'll hear 24 days, 26, 28 days. The point is this. It's not what some people call a snap inspection or surprise inspection. You have to tell the Islamic Republic of Iran that you want to inspect a facility. It could be an army base. Now, what do you think is going to happen? Iran is a huge, huge country. Just look at a map. Once you tell them exactly where you want to inspect, what do you think they're going to do? Yes, they're going to move it. And that's the problem. That's why you need immediate access to any site that you suspect you have nuclear weapons being developed. And that's the Achilles heel of this entire treaty. Now, there are other problems with it, but I wanted to highlight that for a reason. Today is the first day of the 60-day review period, and I want to discuss that for a minute, too. What you need to know is the Senate will be out for recess, as well as the House, for the month of August, the summer recess. So there goes 30 days. We have about 10 days in July. They're really not going to get much done in those 10 days. So immediately 40 days of the 60 days are shot. So when they come back, they have 20 days to have hearings and come to a conclusion. Now, many, both Democrats and Republicans, are saying, most people have already made up their mind. Republicans are against it, and I think that is largely true. And Democrats are split. How split, we don't really know. Now, I want to review a little history. When this nation was founded, the founders knew that the Articles of Confederation were not working. So they ultimately came up with a constitution. And to get the Constitution passed, they had to add the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, to the Constitution. But one of the key provisions of that Constitution is called the Treaty Clause. And I believe that the Founding Fathers were wise, very wise, because they understood that while usually the executive branch, the presidency, should have the lead in negotiating treaties, and I'm deliberately calling these treaties, that the Senate needs to have a role, the advise and consent role, where any treaty that the president negotiates, he has to seek the advice and consent of the Senate. And the Senate, by a two-thirds vote of those present, need to pass the treaty. That is a very high bar, a very high bar. But the burden to do that is on the president. And I think that is a very wise policy. Because most of the time on treaties, although there have been exceptions to this, you'll get a split in Congress with one party against it, one party for. And some of the ones that are against it, there might be some that are for. So it is a high bar. The two-thirds of those present in the Senate must approve of it. Now, what did the Republican Party do? And remember the name Senator Corker. Yep, he's a real corkeroo. They came up with a bill that was passed that, in effect, put the treaty provision on its head. Yes, it did give Congress the right to review the treaty, and that clock has started today. But now the burden is on Congress to stop it. In other words, if they want to stop this deal, they have to get 67 votes. In other words, the burden is no longer on the president. And that's why the president and the Democrats went along with it. The Republican Party is regretting that today. Now, some will try to defend Senator Corker, but I don't like senators to change the Constitution. And that is, in effect, what the Republican Party did for the Iranian so-called nuclear deal. Note, they keep calling it a deal. There's a reason for that. I think, given the importance, it's by far a treaty. It falls under that category of a treaty. You'll get arguments, and I've even made the point that many of the agreements that administrations make, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, they're not treaties. And they're not treaties because of the scope, the seriousness of it. Now, many would argue that many more so-called agreements should be treaties. But I think, just based on what we're talking about, nuclear weapons and the potential for nuclear proliferation, in other words, an arms race to get the bomb, the nuclear bomb in the Middle East, this deal rises to the level of being a treaty. You see, if they had left the Constitution alone, President Obama could not get this deal through Congress. Could not. No way, no how. Now, it's more than a 50-50 proposition. Oh, there'll probably be 60, 61, maybe even 62 votes in the Senate against it. But you need 67. You're going to be shy. I don't know. It's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I don't know. But you're going to fall short. And Corker was interviewed when this bill was going through. Oh, it's going to be a hard lift. Oh, yes, it's a hard lift. But what's even more disgusting about this is the risk that this deal puts American military personnel all across the world at, and our allies in the Middle East at, namely Israel and Saudi Arabia, who are firmly opposed to it. The Arab states in the Middle East oppose this. Israel opposes it. I oppose it for even more basic reasons, that this provides tens and really, over time, hundreds of millions of dollars to the Islamic Republic of Iran, and they're going to do several things. They're going to continue to oppress their own people. This is very much supporting the very despotic regime, the tyranny that is in Tehran, in other words, in Iran, by the mullahs. I call them the mad mullahs. This really empowers them and makes it very, very difficult for the Iranian people to have a regime change. Some would say it's even impossible. Because when you give a despotic regime that kind of money, they are going to clamp down on any dissent. They already have a well-deserved reputation for torture and killing any dissidents that oppose the mullahs. You don't want to visit or go on a vacation to Iran, because you might end up in one of their prisons and be tortured and maybe not released for many years, if ever released. And the Iranian people are the ones that pay the price. So this is very much a win for the Islamic Republic of Iran in that regard alone. And I think that's a big win. Second, and I think important, is this will fund terrorism throughout the region. And it's really globally. It's not just the Middle East. And that needs to be kept in mind. That's why I call it the traitorous terrorist treaty, because it enables terrorists. Many people are going to die. So President Obama and Kerry have blood on their hands. They know it, but they don't care. And they're certainly not going to admit it. They will make the case, well, this was about nuclear weapons. It wasn't about terrorism and trying to change the behavior of the Iranian regime. Well, the whole purpose of this was try to eventually bring the Islamic Republic into the community of nations. You're not going to be brought into the community of nations if, whether it's in Yemen or Syria or in several countries in South America, you're supporting terrorism and terrorist act. And that cannot be denied. So if anything, the money does several things. It increases the power of the regime and makes it more and more difficult for any dissident groups to overthrow the mullahs, which would be difficult, but not impossible. It also encourages them to continue doing what they're doing. We've rewarded terrorism. And remember, as the sanctions are lifted, Iran is going to be selling oil, and that's going to bring even more money. You see, our biggest card, if you will, leverage with them was the sanctions. And that card has been thrown away, simply been thrown away, because the president wanted a legacy. John Kerry wanted a Nobel Peace Prize. So the security of the United States and the American people were betrayed. Ultimately, this will lead to an arms race. They're saying this is going to stop an arms race. No, it does just the opposite. Why do you think the Arab countries, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Turkey, are going to do? Over time, they are going to get nuclear weapons. That is the results, or will be the results or consequences of this deal. I think it's an atrocious deal. Now, in some small way, I'm celebrating. Why? The American people don't like this deal. And they will vote out of office Democrats, both in the House and the Senate, that go along with it. In other words, this does some real serious damage to the Democratic Party, both its senatorial candidates as well as its House candidates, and I would also say to Hillary Clinton, running for president. This deal is going to be increasingly unpopular as more and more of the details leak out. So there's some consolation that hopefully the president and the Democratic Party will not have the White House come the end of January of 2017, and whoever is elected will tear up this so-called deal. Now, what is the president trying to do today, the sly, slick dude? He's trying to rush through the Security Council, and it has been rushed through, to get a vote favorable to the deal. And trying to make the point that international law trumps United States law. Well, it doesn't. But that's what's going on. He's trying to put pressure on Democrats now that might have voted with the Republicans against the deal to give them some cover, and I think that's what you're going to see. Several that were on the fence will now say, well, if the United Nations is for it, even though I have some reservations, I'm for it. That's what's going on. You see, the leadership, if you can call it that, of the Republican Party in the Senate were played for fools, and they betrayed their oath of office. Actually, both parties did this by not insisting that the treaty provisions of the Constitution as written be complied with. Namely, two-thirds of those presidents need to vote in favor of it. In other words, the president needs to seek out the advice and consent of the Senate, and he needs to get a two-thirds vote. That does not apply to this deal. They're trying to say it's not a treaty. And second, because of that Corker nonsense, the Constitution was turned on its head. Now it's the responsibility of Congress, namely the Senate, to come up with 67 votes. And I don't think they're going to come up with it. I could be wrong, but I don't think they're going to be at least one, if not several, votes shy. You see, if we were following the Constitution, and that were the case, then this deal would never pass, and it would be defeated. So you can thank the Republicans, as well as the Democrats, but the Republican Party for this. So the American people are watching. They've seen the Democratic Party sell out their country, that's why I call it treasonous, and support a terrorist regime. And then you've seen the Republican parties make it easy for Obama to accomplish this. Gee, with leadership like that, or friends like that, who needs enemies? Who needs enemies? So we're going to hear more about this traitorous terrorist treaty, not so much in August, but in September. And maybe the American people will wake up and start shouting, pounding the tables, going to meetings in the local district in the Senate, to make it abundantly clear to Democratic senators and House members, but also Republicans, we don't want this treaty passed. It is an absolutely worse deal, and we were sold out. Now, I want to, in the time remaining, I thought this was by far the most important story, but there's another story that's getting a lot of attention, and this broke, I think, Friday. I could be off a day. And I, at first, was very, very, very suspicious. Because what I was hearing was that Trump said that McCain was not a hero. My first reaction was, why is he commenting at all about McCain because he's not running for president? But I thought about it and I said, something's wrong here. This is taken out of context. And the media, especially television, but also the newspapers, were also doing this. And they were celebrating the fact that's the end of the Donald. Bye-bye, Donald. You don't insult veterans, and you don't insult a war hero. So I did some digging, and I was exactly right. Who started this food fight, and why did they start it? And why is the media supporting McCain and not Trump? You see, what is Donald Trump? What is his key issue right now? I hope he develops some more. It's illegal immigration as well as legal immigration. That is the one subject the Democratic parties do not want to be an issue, what I would call a wedge issue for the 2016 election. And also the establishment Republican elite, if truth be known, don't want this as an issue as well. In other words, they want Donald Trump to go away. That's what's going on. Both the Democrats and the Republicans, especially the establishment and the media, want to marginalize, demonize, and ultimately force Donald Trump to leave the race. Well, Donald is not leaving the race. And the reason why he responded the way he did and what the press is saying, frankly, is a lie. McCain started it by saying, and remember, Donald Trump had over 15,000 people in the Phoenix Convention Center. And McCain said, well, he's attracting the crazies. Well, that's very insulting to Republicans, to conservatives, to libertarians, and those who are concerned about the rule of law. Because I have been waiting and firmly believe that illegal immigration is not only an important issue, it's very much a wedge issue for this reason. It affects jobs, it affects security, crime, drugs, and also the corruption and the commission of crimes in the United States. In other words, it's a job, crime, drug, corruption issue. And neither the Democratic leadership or the Democratic Party nor the leadership in the Republican Party wants this to be an issue. Even though the overwhelming majority of the American people in poll after poll after poll want illegal immigration. In other words, illegal aliens that have entered this country. And there's somewhere between 30 and 50 million minimum of illegal aliens that have entered this country in the last 15 to 20 years. It's quite a large number. It's not the 11 or 12 million that you hear in the news. That's the other big lie. You see, the media is very good in perpetuating the big lie. That's one of the propaganda techniques. Repeat the lie over and over and over, and pretty soon everybody agrees with it. Even though if you talk to the people that are actually trying to stop the illegal immigration, they will tell you for every one that they apprehend or detain, a minimum of 3 to 5 make it into the country. In other words, they escape, and maybe one goes home. But that still means minimum 2 to 3 stay. Now, here's what you need to understand. Until Obama became president, the apprehensions were running, the average was about 1 million a year. Sometimes it was higher, sometimes it was lower. So if you multiply that number by 2 or 3, that's 2 to 3 million come to, for example, Dallas, which is a big sanctuary city, but there are several in Texas. And if the American people find out about this, and it's hard to get the message out, the numbers are available. Someone wanted to really... Well, I know Ann Coulter published a book on this. I think it's Adios America. But my point is this. Donald Trump is making this the key issue of his campaign. He wants to build a wall. I don't think you need a wall. I think you need a double fence. And in between that double fence, you need a road, a well-paved road, and it needs to be patrolled. You need surveillance cameras. And if we had that across the whole U.S.-Mexican border, that would stop, or at least plug up, some of the illegal immigration. We still have the problem of people overstaying their visa. But you see, that's only half the problem. The biggest problem, if you really want to stop, not just for a day, a week, a year, but forever, illegal immigration, you have to prosecute, and this is what I've not heard from Donald Trump, the businesses that hire these illegal aliens. And there are hundreds of thousands of businesses in the United States that do this. Why? Because they're cheap, compliant labor. You see, this is what the elites, the ruling elites, in both the Democratic and the Republican Party simply do not want to be discussed, especially in a debate. And some of the people running don't want this discussed in a debate, including the former governor of Texas, Rick Perry, which you'll notice he jumped on Trump on his McCain is not a hero. What Trump said, and it was a response to a question, he said four times McCain is a war hero. The only time he said not was immediately responding to the question, but he repeated McCain is a war hero. That was twisted by the press to say Trump calls McCain not a war hero. I would get over McCain. For this reason, he is a loser. He lost the 2008 race. He's a bully, and I don't think he's very bright. Forget about him. Move on, Mr. Trump. I encourage you to listen to the videos, and you will see what I say. I mean, it's the one with Trump sitting, it looks like, on a couch, and you can see the whole exchange. But that was twisted. We had over 600 prisoners of war in the Vietnamese War, over 600. Many of them, if not all of them, were tortured, including John McCain. I salute John McCain's service. I honor the fact that he had to put up with this torture, but so did dozens, hundreds of other servicemen that were captured. And the North Vietnamese were brutal. So my advice to Mr. Trump is defend yourself, because he is a bully, and that's the only way to deal with a bully. You gotta go after him. You gotta, don't be pushed around by him. And I think Donald Trump understands that, but move on. Move off this. John McCain is a loser. He doesn't deserve your time or attention. And I believe Donald Trump will continue to rise in the polls. He hasn't really taken a hit over this, because I think the American people ultimately are fair. With that, I have to wrap up the show with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.